And good morning and good afternoon, everyone. It's Sunday, November 16th. I'm Phyllis Pricer, your hostess for the Higher Dimensions. And welcome. It's a glorious day in the East. And we have a nice guest with us today, a gentleman who is a police investigator, Mr. Larry Flaxman. And he's also the president and senior researcher of ARPAS, the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies Group. And they do scientific-based investigation for paranormal and other environmental data and anomalies. Welcome, Mr. Flaxman. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're quite welcome. This is going to be a fun session. We try not to take ourselves too seriously, actually, because, you know, I've always said you can die of terminal seriosity if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And I think tendency among researchers and groups is to take themselves so seriously that you can't have fun with it. And basically, my opinion is you should be able to laugh and have fun with just about anything in life, including the research of paranormal.
Sure.
Because so many people consider it such a, serious subject. But, you know, there's a great deal of laughter and sense of humor in the universe. And I point to mankind in general as being God's sense of humor. So he wouldn't have created us if he hadn't had a sense of humor. At any rate, I am so glad to welcome you to our show. And working on a theme of working with UFOs and working with paranormal activity, I'd like you to give a little bit of your background, how you became involved in this research, and what you all do and hope to do with your group.
Gosh, that's a pretty far-ranging question there.
Well, we got an hour, so we're going to make as much use of it as we can.
Okay. Well, let's see. Where do I start? What got me interested?
Okay.
I wish I had some sort of a spectacular tale to tell, but truth be told, I really don't. I've always been interested, personally, in unknown phenomena, whether it was UFOs, whether it was Bigfoot, whether it was the Loch Ness Monster. I've always had an interest in things that seem a little Fortean in nature. Haven't had any real experiences really that kind of pushed me over the edge and pushed me into paranormal investigation. But I think as I've started to get older, I believe that the sense of my own mortality has somewhat kicked in, and I've started to realize that, you know, life is very, very short.
Right.
And I really would like to know, is there something else that happens?
Is it the end
when we pass away? So that's what got me interested in the whole paranormal aspect. But I've always been interested in lots of unexplained things, not just ghosts.
Okay. That's okay. That's valid. That's very valid. Did you ever meet anybody who had experiences that sort of triggered your curiosity into seeking more along the lines of a formal inquiry or scientific inquiry, as we would call it?
I have, yeah. Actually, I've spoken with and done a lot of research on a lot of the things that are out there, and yeah, that was definitely one of the turning points also that kind of helped me to get interested in this. I kind of looked at the field a little bit, and I realized that there's really not a whole lot of organizations that look at things from a purely scientific perspective. It seemed like that was something that was sorely lacking in the field, that there's a lot of people that are out there that, you know, they use psychics, they use new age methods, things like that, which I really wanted something that would focus on the black and white, something that really focused on scientific methodology, scientific method, something that really was, you know, black or white.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say that it's possible that given the technology of, and I'm assuming you're beginning or you do believe, that there is life out there beyond our beltway, so to speak, that our scientific methods would be primitive and might not be up to the standards of being able to prove or disprove?
Very much, and that's actually something I spoke about that at a conference a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Paranormal investigation basically has been occurring for about 150 years. People have been, ever since the spiritualist movement, people have really been interested in pursuing paranormal phenomena from somewhat of a scientific perspective, but more of an experiential type perspective. In the past 150 plus years that's been being done, we're no closer today than we were then as far as answers. So, you know, that immediately should tell you something. That should really cause you to reflect and think, well, maybe we're not doing something right, or, you know, maybe we need to think outside of the proverbial box as far as what we're looking, where we're looking, and how we're looking. Right. So I definitely do think that. I think that with what we have now, technology-wise, I think is probably the best method that we do have to look for paranormal phenomena, or look for things that, may be prescient to a paranormal event, which is really what my organization does. But no, you're absolutely right. I think that what we are using, though, is quite primitive, and you know, it's things are advancing. The technology is advancing, but you know, it's still, until we actually know where to look, then it's really hard to know what we're looking at and how to use it. So, you know, the equipment that we use now, my organization, RPAST, we focus on environmental conditions. We're not ghost hunters. We look strictly at environmental changes that may occur at a quantum level when a paranormal event occurs. Now, you hear a lot of ghost hunter groups that say, you know, we look at EMF and we look at temperature, and, you know, that's great, but we actually look, we're much, much different than that. Mm-hmm. We actually look at about 80 different data points, and we're looking for things that change within the environment when a supposedly paranormal event occurs. So the equipment that we use is actually tailored for environmental logging, basically. It's looking at environmental conditions. It's not looking for paranormal phenomena. So, in answer to your question, I come all the way back around full circle. Yes, I think it's the equipment that we're using is quite primitive for what we're using it for. But in certain aspects of what we're using it for, it is, I think, acceptable, especially if you look at paranormal things. But, you know, once you start looking, I'm a big believer in the quantum theory of paranormal phenomena. I think there's things that are occurring at the quantum level that we can't see and that we have a very difficult time to measure. And the equipment that we have out there really is not suited to measure that kind of stuff. Okay. We can measure the after. You know, there's a cause and effect. And, you know, we can measure the effect, but we can't really measure the cause because of the primitive nature of the equipment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was the 5-minute answer to your 10-second question. I'm sorry.
It's okay, because you're allowed to do that. We don't have parameters. Here, you're allowed to express yourself and to try and clarify things, because I think that's very important. I've had myself some experiences, both of psychic and of seeing UFOs, and having encounters. Also, I have recently, as the last week or so, run into, and you were talking about it being when the last spiritualist, you know, within the last 150 years, run into some artifacts from the Shang Dynasty, which is about 3,000 to 1,600 B.C., which shows statuary, busts and carvings and paintings showing what we would call the aliens, including the large almond-shaped eyes or cat-shaped eyes, and so forth and so on. Are you familiar with going into research or, I guess you could call it historical or archaeological research as well, or is it you just more or less focused on the current era in this type of thing?
Personally, I'm interested in that. You know, I've done a lot of research on the UFO phenomena, but as far as my organization knows, we strictly focus on paranormal phenomena, more so ghosts. I think there's a lot of crossover probably between the two things as far as phenomenological events, but no, for the most part, we do not we don't investigate that. But yeah, I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. Actually, that's archaeology is a side hobby of mine.
Oh, wonderful! It is fascinating, isn't it?
It is very much.
So you are really interested in that which is beyond life itself, like say a Houdini appearance, or have you ever, and I'm going to guess, you might even say yes to this, gone to the Gettysburg battlefield?
Yes, I have.
Okay, you have, Well, I'm talking about paranormal events. My Lord have mercy on us. Any place, I think, what have you found that there were something that was, say, more emotionally traumatic, shall we say, would have a stronger event report? If that would be the right thing? environmental event report attached to it?
Right.
Would you say that's about a possibility, or
yeah.
that's what you're finding?
No, absolutely. I think that's definitely a possibility.
Okay. So what are some of the things that you have investigated, and what have these investigations led you to conclude, if anything, so far?
We have, I've been doing this for 13 years.
Wow.
My organization actually has been around. We formally incorporated almost 2 years ago.
Oh, how nice.
But I've been doing this for a long time. I would say, I can't even tell you how many thousands of places I've investigated.
Just take some that seem more, some that are more interesting or more, how am I going to explain this? More likely to be accepted as proof.
Very few and far between.
Okay.
The things that we've actually found that are the black and white, the actual for sure stuff, is very few and far between. Most of what happens on a paranormal event, and you have to, if you watch any of the ghost hunter shows on TV, it's really not indicative of what a paranormal investigation really is like. I mean,
okay.
for the most part, they're billed as entertainment shows. They're not billed as reality documentaries, right?
I don't like them very much, to be honest with you.
No, there's a lot of pros and cons. You know,
yeah.
I think definitely one of the pros is it's definitely brought a lot of awareness of the field to the public.
That's a good one, yes.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of negatives. But, you know, a perfect example, we did an investigation last night at an old movie theater that was built in the 20s.
Okay.
And what you see on TV, it's like nonstop action. You know, there's a 30-minute or an hour-long episode, and it's just nonstop,
mm-hmm.
you know, things happening. And I can tell you, you know, last night being a perfect example, nothing happened. You know, we sit around basically for 6 hours watching the cameras, you know, trying to do some EVPs, things like that, and it wouldn't sell. If that was, you know, if they would have filmed last night for TV, I mean, advertisers obviously wouldn't have been interested in that. People wouldn't have wanted to watch it because it wasn't exciting. So there really is, you know, there are definitely some negatives for that as well. People get the wrong impression that, you know, it's this glamorous, fun, exciting hobby to be involved in. And, you know, 99% of the time, it's really not. But with that being said, with all the investigations that I've done, there's been very few, I think, that I would say would have given me definite proof scientifically of something. There's been a tremendous amount of experiential data that's been gathered. Of
right.
course, experiential data, as cool as it may be, and as you know, as cognizant to the investigation as it may be, it's really not considered scientifically admissible. You know,
right.
a person's personal
right.
experience, you can't recreate it for another person. And you know, two people may be in the exact same room, standing right next to each other. One person has an experience, the other doesn't.
Right.
So you know, there's no scientific control that's involved in that either.
Right.
So you can't really count it, but it's still something that you keep track of. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I would say most of the investigations that something like that's happened, where there's been an experiential moment, that's I would say fairly common. And you know, that really begs the question. What is the experience, or what is the phenomena that we're actually experiencing? Is it something that's perhaps being created inside of us? Is there some sort of brain chemistry, perhaps, that's, you know, reacting somehow with the environment that may be causing that to happen? Or is there truly a phenomenological explanation for it? And that's something that we're looking at. That's something we're trying to explore and trying to explain. Why two people, you know, may, right next to each other, one may have an experience, one may not.
Well,
there's a lot to the puzzle. There really is.
In other words, and that's why I say I find maybe perhaps that the boundaries, the parameters, the protocols maybe
mm-hmm.
that we use may not be appropriate for that setting necessarily.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
some people may be more sensitive than others, and also since you're dealing with human beings, it could also be a belief system.
Absolutely, it could.
How they feel that week.
Yep.
Or that night. Okay.
Right.
And it could also be whether it has meaning for the people. One might have a greater meaning. It might mean something to the one person, or to someone else it doesn't have any meaning whatsoever.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head with that.
Okay.
You know, I think also with my knowledge of the UFO phenomenon, some of the other, you know, cryptozoology and some of the other
right.
different fields, it's very, very similar. You know, if you look at across the board, that, you know, that there's, I think, a lot of similarities between those types of experiences. Mm-hmm. And it, I think the same questions could probably be asked mm-hmm. to experiencers in those other
yes.
experiences as well.
Yes.
You know, it's, there's a lot of crossover. I think there really is.
Well, you know, I've had paranormal experiences all of my life, and I would say in that I've heard a voice whisper in my ear to get me out of danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I found when I was 5 years old, my mother was attacked and beaten and robbed, and I tracked the man with my mind and led police to where he lived.
Hmm.
And it was dismissed because who at 5 years old was back in the early, late 40s, who's going to believe a 5-year old?
Right.
Nobody. Okay. So they did find the man later on. They found my mother's purse in the house. So they knew he was, and he admitted to being the one who beat her and robbed her. So, you know, there is that. But, you know, I've also seen people who've passed over. I used to have imaginary playmates, you know, and, but a lot of kids do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot
sure.
of kids do. And sometimes it gets, you finally drop it because people laugh at you and make fun of you and think you're weird. So you just stop being different than anyone else because you want acceptance. I think also it's a matter of we don't want to see things and we shut ourselves off from them.
Yeah.
After a long period of time as well. That's another issue that I have. And I didn't believe in UFOs, by the way, until I saw one.
Hmm.
My mother was from Missouri. Show me. Okay.
Yeah.
I have you ever gone to Harpers Ferry, West Virginia? That is another great
no,
place.
No. Huh? Been there.
You have?
No, have not.
You should. Mandy Lou, I will tell you. It is phenomenal. You will see a lot because there was a lot of violence up there, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Civil War, that's where John Brown was captured. It's a great, great place to go. I personally do not go to battlefields anymore because I can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot take the what I feel, what I see, what I hear, what I smell. And until I went to Gettysburg, I didn't realize that in battle you could smell fear, that you could hear. It was as though I was reliving the battle myself.
Sure.
And I had no clue that there was a smell of fear. Absolutely none. But there is, isn't there, in the heat of battle, if you've ever been involved in a fear situation. So I have to say that I think what you're doing is a phenomenally wonderful thing, because I think it's very important to do that, to get things listed. But you might want to go there as one of your places to go.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be an interesting place.
Oh, yes. And there's a lot of paranormal activity associated with it because of the Civil War events. And also because it was a crossroads with the Cumberland Gap. They
mm-hmm.
had the, they had that barge route leading from Chesapeake up there to deliver goods, and it was a very rough and violent place even before the Civil War. And so there's a lot of, and a lot of Indian activity too, by the way, up there because
mm-hmm.
of it. Because of that area being settled. And so it's just a suggestion as another place where you could check out things and find out, because there is a lot of residue left in those buildings and in those places.
Yeah.
So
we've done a couple of battlefields, and
good.
I've always had a good time. I did one, I guess, about 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Another group invited me to. We've done, in our past, we've done some of the larger ones here in Arkansas, but about 2 years ago, a group invited me to go with them to one in West Memphis.
Oh, West Memphis, okay.
Yeah, and it was overlooking the river, and it was really cool. It was...
Which river, darling? The Memphis River?
The Mississippi River.
Mississippi, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Excuse my knowledge of geography. It's not really the way it should be. Go ahead. My ignorance.
I think it was the Mississippi. It was the Arkansas River. I don't know. It was
the Mississippi, probably.
Yeah, it probably was. But it was a battlefield up on a hill, and it was overlooking the river. And apparently they had a cannon embankment that was there that they would use to protect the city of Helena, West Helena, in Memphis.
Okay.
from the approaching troops. And we had done an investigation there, and it was hot, and it was buggy, and it was about midnight, and we were all sweating, and we were ready to call it a night. Nothing had really happened other than being bitten by a bunch of mosquitoes.
Uh-huh.
So we start carrying our equipment to the car, and then we're standing around on the bluff afterwards, just, you know, talking, shooting the breeze. And the next thing we know, about maybe 1,000 feet away from us, kind of a little bit down and to the right of the bluff, we started seeing this really, really bright orange flash that was coming from the top of the bluff.
Really?
And we're all kind of just standing there looking at it, and there's no sound whatsoever, and there was no access to this bluff either. We were trying to figure out, you know, is there a way to get over there? You know, maybe it's some kids shooting fireworks.
Right.
Trying to figure out what was going on, but there was no roads going up to it. There was no trails that were getting up to it. But anyways, so we watched this orange flash go for, gosh, it would flash, it would last for maybe 10 or 15 seconds and then go out, and then it would, you know, nothing would happen, and then maybe 2 or 3 minutes later, another huge orange flash. And, of course, we're all standing around just dumbfounded trying to figure out what it is. None of us thought to grab a camera. None of us thought to do anything.
We're just looking
at it. Yeah, we're like, you know, what the hell is that? We're all trying to figure out what it was that we're seeing.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, we never figured it out. The next day, they told me that they actually went and hiked up the ridge to see if they could find anything that was up there. There was absolutely nothing that was up there. There was no footprints. There was actually no easy entry or egress into that place. So the only thing that I can think of is that we were somehow seeing some type of
cannon fire.
Yeah, some type of spirit cannon fire. And the yellowish orange, I found out, would actually have been a byproduct of the saltpeter that they would have used in the gunpowder back then.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that. I thought when a cannon goes off, you know, it's such a big flame. I didn't really realize it was a yellowish-orange flame like that.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I think I actually did have a experiential type thing that happened there at a battlefield, and that was really cool. We also did, we've done Pea Ridge Battlefield, which is one of the larger ones here in Arkansas, and that was really interesting. We had the same type of phenomena, but we actually had an audio manifestation.
Okay.
We had several of the investigators that actually had captured what we think may possibly be some type of a phantom gunfire. So,
wow, hey, that's cool.
Pretty interesting stuff, yeah.
Yes.
But, yeah, battlefields have always been a traditionally interesting place for paranormal investigators to check out. And you're right, it could definitely be because of just the amount of residual energy that's left over from, you know, the amount of carnage and death that occurred. So, I enjoy checking those out. I know that sounds macabre, but, very interesting places.
From what I've read, and I have to bow to what you're doing because I don't think I'd have the fortitude to do the other, and I'm certainly at my age, not going to stand around and make myself a feast for the mosquitoes. I've done that all my life, thank you very much. At any rate, my feeling is that, from what I understand, that if there is, and why battlefields is because of the high amount of emotion attached to it. Now, we are finding, and if I can bring this back to current, that with our boys, those who see battle,
mm-hmm.
those who have the most emotional response to it are the ones with the PTSD.
Sure.
The flashbacks and the horror of the battle and the life loss, these are the things that impact human consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So since paranormal is linked to human consciousness, human experience, why would not that hold true? And what I have read about it is that people who die sometimes in their circumstances as brutal as war do not sometimes realize they're dead or cannot move on. Is that better? I'm sorry, I'm here being told nobody could hear me, and I apologize, so I'm hoping I'm doing better. Is this too loud for you, Larry?
No, not at all.
Okay. We were talking about the human equation here and why some battlefields would be the most significant places to visit because of the high emotional content that it somehow imprints upon the locality.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that some of the places are more consistent with time? For example, it's at a certain time of year or a certain date that the phenomena is more likely to be expressed?
No, not at all.
No.
And I think that's actually one of the common misnomers about paranormal investigation. Everyone thinks, you know, you have to investigate at night. You have to investigate in a totally dark place.
Right.
And there are some reasons for doing it in the dark.
Okay.
As far as the amount of or the lack of electromagnetic activity that's occurring, like in the ionosphere and stuff. But
okay.
No, there's really no good reason why, you know, an event would have to occur at a specific time, a specific date, a specific you know, time of year. What's really interesting to me, and something that that I really am very interested in doing research on right now, is what would, going kind of back to the emotional attachment to a place,
yeah,
what would actually cause that, and what is, you know, in other words, what is the mechanics behind one person's attachment or one person's emotions being attached versus another's maybe not being attached? And I think that also begs the question of, does consciousness itself have energy? And I'm not so sure that it does, and I'm not so sure that it doesn't. I'm kind of on the fence about that. If you look at the first and second law of thermodynamics, the first law of thermodynamics basically says that matter and energy cannot be created nor destroyed. Well, we all know that.
But
you can't destroy energy, you can't create energy. The second law of thermodynamics kicks in basically and says that, okay, if matter and energy can't be created or destroyed, something has to happen to it so it can be transferred to another form.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you think about that, you know, does, and the human body is a bioelectric producing entity. Our heart actually produces microvoltages of electricity. I mean, we have equipment that can actually measure that. So when we die, that electricity, that energy, it has to go someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have a hard time wrapping my head around is that electricity or is that energy, is that actually our consciousness? Does that hold our sentient thoughts? And if so, is that perhaps what's getting imprinted when it gets imprinted? If the whole imprintation theory is possible. But, you know, energy and consciousness, to me, within the scientific realm, the two things really don't mix. But as we kind of talked about before, you know, about not using maybe the right equipment or stuff, maybe there's things that we don't yet completely understand about energy and things that we don't completely understand yet about consciousness.
Right.
You know, every day science is making strides, and they're finding out new things about our world that we've never known. I mean, dark matter is something that, you know, it's been talked about, and scientists are actually now trying to, they're actually finding out that it's actually a real possibility.
Exactly.
And,
the other thing I was going to say is, I think you're right. It does have energy, because I read somewhere recently that the scientists have found there's no such thing as an objective observation, that they have found that even looking at bacteria under a microscope, they can change it. Therefore, it has to have energy to change.
Right.
Am I right?
Yeah, that's called the Heisenberg principle.
Okay. I had no clue that it was named, but wouldn't you know? Anyway, at any rate, if your mind can change, and obviously so. Now, I understand there was research done that says that the brain itself does indeed use voltage, very low voltage, but it does indeed use voltage. And thought is energy, okay? Thought is energy. You use energy just to breathe, and your mind uses voltage when it works. I mean, everything works on electricity.
Right.
Okay, or energy, we can call it.
Right.
And the brain, without that, you don't live. But that's why they say if there is nothing on an EEG, you're brain dead.
Right.
So obviously there's got to be energy, and my feeling is energy imprints. It can imprint on anything. Here's an interesting thing. I had a teacher in psychic awareness and so forth and so on, who was hired by an attorney to screen his clients to see, you know, whether or not the guy was somebody viable, if he was lying, if he was bullshit, whatever, okay? And so he would call, if he had a question about a client, he would call her in after the interview with the client and ask her to sit on the chair where the client sat and read, quote unquote, through her rear end whether or not the client was telling the truth.
Right.
So she was absorbing his energy through a part of her body, which was, I hope it wasn't her brain.
You never know.
But she read him, she read him with the bump, with her rear end, sitting on the chair. She picked up his energy. Now that's interesting. You know, that's a phenomenon that is very wonderful to consider. Okay? But I would have to say they will be able to prove that. There are those people who can pick up a piece of jewelry, a piece of paper with a name written on it, who could hold it and tell you a lot about the person whose name or the jewelry it was.
Right.
And that's energy. That's reading energy. That's kinesiology.
It is. And, you know, that makes me wonder, how is it that the energy is imprinting itself on that object? And why is it that only certain objects are somehow permeable to that energy?
No, all objects are. A piece of paper, a piece of wood, anything. You can pick up a piece of dirt.
As far as, like, the ghost phenomena, when people are reporting, you know, that there's a residual spirit in the house, that it appears in the same spot and, you know, things like that, you know, it...
Wouldn't that be the memory, the person...
Actually, one of the theory that's been laid out is that the physical construction of a home, like the rock, the wood, the rock, the things that actually make up the house, can actually somehow imprint that energy, much like a tape recorder or a cassette tape is basically rust. It's iron oxide. And,
really?
You know, it's rust.
Okay.
And that you imprint the energy upon the iron oxide, the tape, and it's basically the same thing, that the material substrate in the house somehow can absorb energy, much like a cassette tape can.
Uh-huh.
So, but, you know, that really begs the question to me, though, is why do we not hear... And I'm not really talking about what you just mentioned a minute ago. I'm saying as far as, like, the residual hauntings that, you know, we've at least been called to investigate.
Right.
It's always a home. It's not like a specific object. It's not, you know, it's not like a plastic Tonka toy car or something like that. You know, it's there's not specific pieces like that.
Well, I think yes, you can, because. You can pick up a rock, for example, and you can hold on to the rock, and you can pretty much tell where that rock came from by holding on and seeing the energy the rock is giving you. Now, the rock is not considered a sentient being, yet it has a memory retention of where it lay or was on the ground for so many years. Does that make sense?
It does, and that's what really interests me. I mean, what is the mechanics of how that... the rock was able to, absorb that energy or absorb that, it's almost like the cassette tape.
Yeah.
You know, it's the rock can somehow absorb things and.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's something maybe science will one day find the answer to. I think if we can find the answer to that, it's probably going to answer a lot of other questions, whether it be UFO, whether it be paranormal.
And I'm going to guess that we don't have that equipment yet that will give us the answer.
I wouldn't think so. No.
I would think it's on its way, because I think we're getting a great deal of help in moving forward in this arena. Lord knows we need it, but it's absolutely fascinating what you're doing. So you've been doing this for you. How do you get funding for this, or does it come all out of pocket? How do you get other people interested? How do you find each other?
We actually we're the second largest group in the country. We're actually the first largest if you don't include the umbrella that's over us, TAPS.
Okay.
Remember, we're a member of the TAPS family, the guys you see on TV, the ghost hunters. But not counting them, that would actually make us the largest group in the country. It's all self-funded, whether it's, you know, personal donations or, you know, just charitable giving. Everything's self-funded. We use about $250,000 worth of equipment.
That's a lot of money.
We have quite a bit invested in it. I mean, all of that is in scientific equipment. I mean, the things that we look at are vastly, vastly different than the ghost hunting groups. That's why, you know, we really don't consider ourselves a ghost hunting group. We're more of an environmental investigation group, I guess you would say.
Right, okay.
But yeah, there's a lot of people that I think very strongly believe in the direction that we are going with what we're doing and how we're doing our investigation. So thankfully we're well funded.
Well, that's fabulous. And do you find that you can use any of this in your work as an office police officer?
Actually, no, but the other way around. I think all of the training that I've had on the law enforcement side has really kind of helped me doing the paranormal phenomena investigation. I mean, the attention to detail, just the way that you look at things from start to finish, you know, I think that really has helped more than anything else.
Okay, that makes good sense.
That's yeah, I mean, it really takes a very investigative mindset, really, to do what we're doing. You know, a lot of the ghost hunting groups, it's a lot different because they go out and they just like to hang out in dark, spooky places and get themselves scared. And it's a social event. It's not really a. What?
I think it's funny. I agree with you.
No, really. That's the way it is. And. You know, it's not a research venture for the vast majority of groups that are out there, and to us it really is, and it's a very serious thing, and we actually have 1, 2, 3, 4, I think we have 9 cops that are on the group with us.
Oh,
so there's actually quite a few people that are in law enforcement that are actually interested in this kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's fascinating.
It lends itself to that discipline. Well, you know, we sometimes have people call in today, sometimes, depending on the subject matter, our listeners are really interested in hearing what's being said. Mm-hmm. So I will encourage anyone to call in if they have an idea or a recommendation or a suggestion, to feel free to call in. You can check us out on the website and with the BBS radio and call in to ask him questions or ask, you know, what do you do with your research findings then? Go from there. But I'm just inviting people to call in or talk or add their information or 2 cents or whatever, if they wish to do so. But what do you do with the findings? What do you hope to conclude from this? What are your mission? What are your goals, in other words?
This another thing I spoke about at a conference 3 weeks ago. There is a vast disparity in the paranormal community. Everybody is basically doing their own thing.
Yeah.
There is nobody that's sharing data. There is no standardization as far as how people are collecting data, how they're analyzing data, and what they're doing with that data.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we've created and that we're hoping other people jump on board with is we've created basically a unified database. And the unified database, it's a SQL Server database, and it allows us to basically input all of the environmental conditions that we get and all of the research data from our investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows us to share it and collaborate with other people, with other investigative organizations, where we have basically a central repository for information. It allows us to search. We can look for correlative things that occur. Like we can look at from one location to another. We can look what was similar, what was dissimilar.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, it will allow us to predict what may be the ideal location to experience X phenomena and when it might be the best type thing.
Huh.
What we're finding with the database, though, not just us, but, again, back to the whole paranormal community, we're finding that people don't like to share. And it's something that's very frustrating, and I think it's going to end up being the death of the field if people don't start sharing.
And this,
you know, everybody is so worried about getting the next book deal, or they're so... You know, they're so worried about getting on TV. You know, people are so self-aggrandizing that they're more interested in, you know, building their names and doing that kind of stuff than they really are in the actual research. So there's not been a lot of groups that actually want to jump on board with the sharing of data. I can tell you stories about groups that think they're so territorial that they think that you need to ask their permission before you come to their... And that's in big quotes.
What?
Their city to come investigate a location.
Oh, please.
No, seriously. And,
I'm sorry. You've touched a sore point with me. The world belongs to everyone. Sorry about that.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. You know, if another organization had said that to me in any of the locations we've been, you know, I think they would get the big middle finger from me. You know, nobody is going to say, you know, this is my city and you can't investigate without asking my permission. You know, screw that. You know, that, you know, we all need to be sharing data. If we're all truly looking for the same answers, and
yes,
hopefully everyone that's serious about this in the field is,
yeah,
and we all need to be sharing data, and we need to be exchanging it, we need to be networking. So one of the reasons, back to our research database, our database is basically closed to everyone that is not serious.
Okay.
The ones that have access to our database now are other members of the TAPS family,
right,
that we believe are serious, as well as we do a lot with higher education. We have several professors that are consultants to us. We have a doctor. We've got a physicist. We have people that are in different fields that we believe would be beneficial for our research, that we allow them to go through our data. Ultimately, we'll allow them to basically correlate things that we find, or, you know, prove or disprove. And then ultimately, the ultimate big picture is that we all do this as a community. But like I said, we're really having a lot of pushback from other organizations because they have different motivations, I guess you would say, for being in this field. And it's a shame, and there's so much, there's drama and strife, and there's so much garbage that goes on in the paranormal field. We're our own worst enemies. It's no wonder that the public doesn't take, for the most part, doesn't take paranormal investigations seriously, because they see some of these crackpot people that are out there doing some of the crazy things that they do. You know, real science, if you're really looking at things really from a real science perspective, real scientists, they share data. They may not always agree, but they share data. There's group collaboration on things. You know, there's a lot more interchange of data than what occurs within the paranormal community. And one group is not going to find the answers by themselves. As much as I would love it for our past to be the group that's going to solve everything, everybody needs to work together.
Well, I think that's part of the reason why they can't find anything at the moment.
Yeah, everyone's looking in different directions. No one's, everyone's repeating, recreating the wheel, basically. Everyone's doing the exact same thing and reproducing it.
What people don't understand, and here we're talking about energy again, and I will step in here because, and afterwards I'll tell you, I almost asked you, tell me what you really think, darling.
It's really a sore point for me. I mean, it really is.
Apparently I did push your little button, but it's okay because, you see, I agree with you. It's perfectly all right. I agree with you. You see, in my life, there is enough for everybody.
Absolutely.
There's enough of glory. There's enough money. There's enough joy to go around to everyone. And the other thing is, what happens when you do not share is your own energy, negativity gets in the way of your being able to move forward.
Oh, sure.
It's
absolutely
when you come together as a group that you create the environment that leads you to move forward into new findings and new arenas.
Yep.
It is a group consciousness that is necessary for moving forward, quite literally. If you get together with a group of like-minded people, and I can even quote the Bible on this one, where two or three or more are gathered in my name, in other words, wherever you have a group effort, you are more likely to have success than on your own. It's as simple as that. It's cooperation.
Yep. You are 100% right.
And I am all for it. So if anybody else is out there listening and you have something you'd like to contribute, feel free, Larry.
Interestingly enough, let me interject one thing. Interestingly enough, I understand that the UFO field is also very similar. I have quite a few friends that are within MUFON, and I understand that there is just as much BS and garbage that goes on in the UFO field as there is in the paranormal field. So, you know, at least I can say we're not alone.
Well, of course you aren't, darling. May I point out Wall Street? May I point out the global economy?
Yeah, absolutely.
If everybody is working from a higher moral standard, everybody benefits. Everybody gets recognized. Everybody has more. And if the self-centeredness is going to go down the tubes, why don't you give them some of your contact information so those who would like to participate or have a story or an idea or a thought may share it with you.
Oh, absolutely. I would love that. Our website address is www.arpast.org. That's ourpast.org. or you can always email me. My email address is larry@ourpath.org.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
Love getting emails. I love hearing that you've got mail.
So do I. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening and you have some thoughts and you are interested, please feel free. And again, my feeling is there's going to be some powerful movements and understanding. And I can almost tell you that those who have a higher moral standard, those who have higher ideals, will be successful. Those who do not, the selfishness is going to get in their own way of success. It's what I call a snatching defeat out of the jaws of victory. But that's my two cents worth.
Yeah, no, I agree. You are absolutely right.
And I've seen it done so often with so many people getting together and creating something wonderful. And as soon as they start breaking off in selfishness, it goes to hell in a handbasket, and you reap some stuff that you really, really, really don't want to have to deal with. And in this world, there is truly enough. You just have to believe it in order to see it with your own eyes. And which is probably why you guys are more successful in getting ahead further, because you seem to have more of a social commitment to each other.
Right.
And more of a genuine belief that together you can find the answers to your questions. And that's what's important.
It is.
Group consciousness. Okay. Now, what else can you tell us to keep us joyful and entertained? I'm really learning a lot, and I do appreciate your coming on the show for this, because it's an aspect that I approach it from a different side, of course, experiential.
Sure.
And it's nice to see the disciplinary approach. So,
well, you know, I think there's absolutely is nothing wrong with the experiential side of things. I mean, I think it's a basic part of human nature. You know, but with that being said, I think every group has its own purpose. Every group,
right,
basically, it has its own charter, and they have their
right
own reasons for being. And, you know, just because our group has chosen to focus on the scientific aspect of things, specifically within the environmental field, doesn't mean that we're any more correct, really, than anyone else. I mean, that's just, we have a different discipline that we've chosen to focus on. I think that all of the groups, you know, I wouldn't say all, most groups really do have a reason for being. You know, whether that's what they do is experiential stuff, whether they, you know, mm-hmm, whatever they do, I think there is a reason for them existing. You know, if it makes somebody feel better,
mm-hmm,
then I think it's okay. That's basically what it boils down to. And I guess I'm going really off on a tangent, but the whole orb phenomena, are you familiar with the orbs?
Talk to me about that. Seeing lights in the sky? Is that what
No, orbs within the paranormal field are balls of light, basically, that people see, and they photograph these things in their home, they photograph them outside.
Oh, okay. Some of it is swamp gas, but that's beside the point.
Well, the 99.9% of it is dust. It's
okay,
airborne particulate matter.
Well,
we've got
swamp dust, but that's okay.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
But
what people are doing is they take these photographs of what they call spirit orbs in their homes or whatever, and they attach a persona to it, like they're
really
seeing the spirit of their grandmother, they're seeing the spirit of their deceased mother or something like that.
No.
And
yeah,
from a scientific perspective, it's dust. You know,
yeah,
we've got very high-dollar sensitive equipment that measures the amount of airborne particulate matter that's in the air, and we can actually tell you how much dust is in your home, things like that. But but people take these pictures, and it generally only occurs with a digital camera with a flash, and there's a certain reason why it occurs, and I'm not going to get into the whole reason why it occurs. But
okay,
people take these pictures, and they see their deceased people in their orb photos.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to be really, really against it. I used to be 100%, you know, oh, it's just completely dust. Don't bother me with the picture. I don't want to see it. You know, I know it's dust. But I've really come around to my thinking in that, and the reason why I'm going this direction is there's a lot of groups that focus very much so on the orb phenomena. But I think a lot of people are using that as a coping mechanism. It's helping them to deal with grief somehow. You know, if they're seeing a manifestation of their dead
grandmother,
dead mother, and it's helping them somehow to cope with grief.
So
you know, who am I to tell them that, no, it's actually dust, that's not your grandmother, or that's not your mother? And, you know, there's a lot of groups that focus on orbs, and that's a big part of what they consider to be scientific evidence. And, you know, while those groups may not be really, truly scientific, I still think that they serve a purpose. And that purpose being, you know, that it's helping people with, it's helping to comfort people, and it's helping them, so.
That's interesting, because as you saw, I wasn't very particularly familiar with that, because that's not where I come from. I mean, I actually see the shape of the person, the being, their shape, you know, I hear them, whatever. So for me, it's not dust. And so I wasn't familiar with that because it's not something I deal with. I had always considered it like swamp dust, a swamp gas, and I laughingly call that because there's a lot of phenomena and stories about people seeing dancing lights, and they thought it was ghosts in the field. And this was, I guess in stories I've read in England.
Mm-hmm. And we investigated a place here in Arkansas. It was the same thing. It was swamp gas.
Yeah. And so, you know, to me, that never spoke to me or appealed to me. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Have you ever done a crop circle? Have you ever tried to investigate?
No. Unfortunately, you know, being here in the deep south, there are none. But that would definitely be something I would love to see, yeah. Yeah, there's not been any reports in Arkansas.
Is there none in the U.S. then? Are there some in the U.S.? I thought there were a few, but not. They're mainly in England for some reason that I...
Well, there's theories. One of the theories why a lot of those things occur in England or Europe is because of ley lines. The magnetic lines that are, you know, interspersed within the... Mm-hmm. Within the earth, but unfortunately we don't experience those here. If we did, I would be right on that. That would be something that would be very interesting.
Maybe you can get a trip to England one day.
I'm hoping to, actually.
That
there's quite a few places there to check out.
Oh yeah.
London Tower.
That would be great.
It would, yeah.
That I think is more interesting, you know, to me. What about you said you don't do UFOs. What about places where they say they have checked areas where they said they thought they saw a UFO land, that there is some electromagnetic or radiation activity?
Actually has contacted us about that. That would be something,
really?
You know, with the amount of equipment that we have that would measure environmental things, that would be perfect and right up our alley. Unfortunately... No one's actually contacted us about UFO stuff. There's a venture that I'm working on with Marie D. Jones. She's my writing partner.
Uh-huh.
Called Para Explorers. And Para Explorers will be somewhat of an extension, I guess you would say, of our path. It's its own separate entity, but it's going to utilize all of the resources, the equipment and stuff of our past, and that will allow us to investigate some things like UFOs and a lot of unknown phenomena that really fall outside of the charter of our past. So hopefully within Para Explorers, maybe people will start contacting us and, you know, allowing us to check out those kind of things, because that would be something. I know there's actually quite a few reports of UFO phenomena in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And the surrounding states,
really?
Texas, Oklahoma, yeah. And I would love to actually get more involved in that.
Well, you might contact places such as the ARE in Virginia Beach.
I've actually been in contact with them.
Have you really?
I am.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm a big Edgar Cayce fan.
Are you?
Absolutely.
So am I.
Yeah,
I have a member there. And have been for years. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, my mother introduced me to that many years ago. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been in contact with them. I contact people with the Rhine Institute. I try to you know, keep a lot of contacts within the field that are, you know, big names like that, people that are really doing some good work,
uh-huh.
people that really have some validity to them. But, yeah, that's cool. That's neat. That we, yeah.
Super. Well, see, we're not that far apart, are we, in our
No. You know, and that's really what I was saying. All of this stuff, there is a connection, I think, between everything. You know,
yes,
UFOs. Ghost, Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, there is some sort of a connection between everything.
There is. There is a holistic point, and it is an absolutely phenomenal activity because we're all one, actually, in essence, I think, from that standpoint. I'm going to have to give a little bit, just a quick information on me now, because we're coming up to goodbye time, and I don't want my producer to shake his finger at me, so to speak. So,
wow, the time really flew.
Oh, didn't it? See, isn't
gosh, that
fun?
It really did.
And you're having fun?
Yeah, I just looked down at my clock, and wow, yeah, that was fast.
Okay, well, what I'd like you to do is just keep in touch with me.
Oh, sure.
Let me know what's
absolutely
happening, because I would love to. If I hear of anything, I would be more than happy to pass it along to you, to see what we could do.
Absolutely.
You, ladies and gentlemen, next week we are going to have Diane Harris. She's a wonderful psychic, and you would like to tune in and listen to her. Remember, I am Phyllis Pricer, your hostess for the Higher Dimensions. I am so glad that you tuned in today to listen to Larry Flaxman and with his group. And Larry, if you give your contact information one more time, and then we can sign off and thank you so much. God bless you for this. Go ahead.
No, thank you for having me.
Yes, go ahead.
Our website address is www.arpast.org. That's arpast.org. Or my email address, if you want to email me personally, is larry@arpast.org. Love to hear from you.
Fabulous. Thank you again. God bless.
Thank you.
Good luck. And thank you all at BBS Radio for listening. We may have just a couple more seconds. So before we do that, a couple more minutes actually, just maybe a minute or so. If there's anything you'd like to add to the very end here, Larry?
Not that I can think of. I think we've pretty much covered everything.
And you didn't think we would.
No, and that was, gosh, really, the time just flew by. That was a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, thank you all, and we'll be talking to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.